Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
One of the comments or positions that my clients bring to me that drives me absolutely crazy is when they come in and they say, I love my spouse, I'm just not in love with them anymore. And it makes me crazy for a bunch of different reasons. First, because it basically says that being in love, the infatuation stage, is more important than the real love part of the relationship. But mostly it makes me crazy because losing that connection is a matter of choice. I'm married 29 and a half years. I have two kids. I get that the day-to-day grind can take a toll. And I get that it's really easy to lose sight of the relationship. But in the book, 168 Hours, by Laura Vanderkam, you tell people what your priorities are by how you spend your time. If your relationship has changed for the worse, it's because you and or your partner aren't making it a priority anymore. So I'm joined today by Dr. David Schramm, family life specialist and associate professor at the University of Missouri, about why this happens and what actions you can take to turn it around. So, Dr. Schramm, David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Leslie, for having me.
I wanted you on as a guest because I ran across your information on your website, and you talk about this wonderful concept about relationship dehydration. So what is that? What is relation dehydration? I love that term.
Yeah, relation dehydration is basically what all couples, all of us will experience. And you mentioned at times we have these ups and downs, and we pass that infatuation stage. All of us will experience these lulls, this time when we're kind of drifting along in our relationship pool, really is how I refer to it. And this dehydration, there's basically three ways that a pool loses water. And the first one of these is evaporation. You know,
right.
If you put some water out in a swimming pool, it doesn't
and
take
ignore
long.
It.
And ignore it. If you do nothing, yeah,
right.
You'll simply drift apart. Some have called that the natural float to isolation. You don't have to do anything, actually, to ruin a relationship. You simply do nothing, and you'll naturally
right.
drift apart or lose, you know, that evaporation, those good times from your relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's the first one. Okay, second
yeah.
way is...
Yeah, the second way a pool might lose water is actually, you know, taking a cup or something and splashing some of the water out of the pool. And I refer to that as doing, you know, unkind things. Those are the criticizing, mm-hmm. the name-calling, you know, the sarcastic remarks or those spiteful things
mm-hmm.
on purpose or sometimes unintentionally to injure our partner. And that is like taking these, you know, cups out of the relationship pool. John Gottman, known researcher, he compares the ratio of 5 to 1. We've got to be adding 5 cups of positivity into our pool for every 1 cup of negativity that we dip out of our pool. But I think
right.
it's important to point out that all of us, you know, do this at times. All of us neglect
sure.
you know, our relationship. All of us will say unkind things. So all of us are dipping or letting water evaporate from our pools.
Mm-hmm.
That's natural. But we
and heaven
need to,
forbid anybody does a cannonball into
yeah,
their pool.
Yeah, that's right. And then those occasionally, yes, will occur. Some major things or when trust is broken can definitely you know, take a lot of water out of our relationship pool. The third way I discuss that a swimming pool might lose some water is actually from below, the cracks in the pool, in the bottom, kind of in that foundation. And I represent
mm-hmm.
these cracks as loyalty leaks. I talk about them, and
mm-hmm.
they stem from, it could be broken commitments or loss of trust or, you know,
right.
even broken promises, cheating on a spouse, those types of things that are a little bit more serious, that take work. You can't simply add a few more cups into the pool when there's cracks
to counterbalance that, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I do want to point out, because you did mention infidelity, but which I think is a lot of people realize is a major breach of trust. But I'm getting the impression that when you're talking about these leaks, it can be not anything quite that, you know, it's not like blowing a hole in the side of your pool. It's more like, you know, not responding to texts on a fairly regular basis or not being honest, you know,
yes,
not about a big thing like infidelity, but just kind of on an every day-to-day basis. Like you said, not keeping your word.
Yeah, not showing up for something or not following through. Yeah, those types of little things can really add up. And you know, a couple might feel, or an individual might feel burned, you know, in the relationship from a something that, oh, I thought you were going to do this, or you said you were going to keep your word, or, yeah, just trust.
Right.
Finding out that someone's doing something, or, yeah, it's those just are unhealthy, and they add up, and they tend to small little cracks at first, but they can, over time, they can lead to more serious issues.
Right. And, you know, and one of the things, and I know that this is in the research, and one of the things that people don't plan for as well as I think they could is when they have children and the time crunch that that puts on. Not only does the pool stagnate, they're not paying attention to it because they're playing in a different pool, I think, but they also don't realize that in the process they may actually be dipping, as you call it, because they're actually not present with their spouse anymore. They're making a personal choice to spend a lot more time with their children than maybe they need to.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think a lot of this is perhaps not on purpose. You know, I have four children of my own, and you kind of get into the swing, okay, and they're demanding. They demand time. They're tiring, especially if a parent is home with them all day. Yeah,
right.
That can really take it out of you. And the last thing you want to do, you know, in the evening is spend a romantic time because you're spent, you're tired, you're exhausted.
Right.
And so there really does take it takes intentionality of, okay, what can we do this week to add a cup of connection to our pool? And it doesn't have to be major things. It can be simple, small and simple things I talk about that they can add little cups of connection. It could be a conversation, a bowl of ice cream. It can be going for a walk. But spending some alone time is needed, and it's tough to balance that in today's world of hustle and go.
Right. And like in this book, 168 Hours, which that statement of we tell people what our priority is by how we spend our time is critical. And I know a lot of people say, well, but I have to do this. In fact, I actually had a client tell me one day when I said this to him. He said to me, my marriage is important, but. And I said, now you're going to tell me why that's not a true statement.
And,
you know, and I didn't mean that in a harsh, judgmental way.
Right.
And it may have come out that way, and I really didn't mean it that way. But it's really that mindset that we get into. I had a guest on a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about the, you know, she actually called it work-home balance, and I thanked her because what everybody talks about is work-life balance, and I'm going, well, wait a minute, isn't your work part of life? It's really how are we setting up our lives in a way that we actually are taking care of the things we say we want to take care of.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's more, I call it conscious connection. You have to consciously be thinking about it, or again, you'll kind of natural drift, or there'll be evaporation before long. You don't even realize it. But I've heard the same thing of couples and parents saying, you know, I just don't have time. I just don't have time.
Right.
And if we don't make time, then we'll lose that connection. When we'll naturally drift apart.
Now, you actually have two kind of interesting acronyms for things. One is called PARCHES and the other one is called SPARK. And I want to talk about the PARCHES first because I think there's this idea that we fall in love. Falling in love is really easy. It's all hormonal and people don't seem to get that. We decide to go ahead and get married or be in a long-term relationship, which is great. And then life happens.
Yeah.
And, You know, I think that there are some things that go more to that second taking water out of the pool that people don't realize how damaging they're actually doing to the relationship. I had a couple I've been working with a while, and I've talked to them about what I call the marriage mindset, that they're on the same team, and they said to me, "Well, what do you suggest we do when we forget we're on the same team?" And I'm kind of like going, "Well, that's the whole point. You can't forget that.
Yeah,
it's like forgetting you have a kid.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I'm counting 1, 2, 3. Oh, everybody's here. It's like, well, no, Sam's not here. What happened to Sam? You
know? Yes, it's part of who you are. You are a team."
And so could you go through, because I really like what the P stands for in PARCHES. Could you go through what PARCHES stands for?
Yeah, you bet. These letters, they come together and they spell PARCHES, and that's exactly what happens when these are around, when these surface in our relationships. The P, I think, is perhaps the most damaging. So P stands for pride, and I call it the universal sponge that often finds its way into our relationship pools. I think it is, when it comes down to it, all relationships, those who fail and those relationships who flounder along, I think we can almost always boil it down to pride. It's the
right.
me first marriage, and it's rarely a happy one. And if it's left unchecked, that pride continues. It's almost like pulling the plug at the bottom of the pool. When pride enters, then you've got problems. You've got serious problems in the relationship pool, and it's more
right.
of a competition rather than a other. Yep, you're facing inward instead of outward.
Right, and I'm not sure that we teach people how to do that well, because you know, one of the things I talk about is we cannot, it's very difficult for us to actually get outside of our own heads and our own way of thinking.
Yeah.
Because, hey, we're pretty normal. I'm pretty normal. I don't think I'm anything special. And if doing it this way works for me, then it's a good way to do it. And I talk about that being Leslie world, that in Leslie world, everybody does everything that my way.
Yeah, that's right.
My problem is I just can't get anybody else to buy into Leslie world.
Yeah.
But there is this idea that my way is best.
Right. And just that attitude, I mean, A is actually, that's what the next letter in PARCHES stands for, attitude. Just that attitude of my way or my way of thinking, digging my heels in against this other person, it does. It's just a poison that is pervasive in relationship pools today. A wise person once said that every divorce is a result of selfishness on the part of one or the other or both parties to the marriage. And I really think there's a lot of truth in that when it comes down to this me or my way, or, you know, they should see it my way. And it's kind of the natural part of all of us, you know, want
right.
the me first, what's in it for me attitude. And that just does not work in happy marriages.
Yeah, I can't remember who said this, and it's a quote that I use all the time, and I really should know who said it, but you know, the quote is, marriage is our last best chance to grow up.
it really is. It kind of forces us to think of the other person first.
Somebody else.
Yeah, somebody
right.
else. And then children come along, and then there's even more. Oh, now I have to think of someone else. And so it's a balance between, I mean, caring for yourself as a person, taking care of you, but not focusing solely on yourself. It's putting the needs of the other person first.
Yeah, I do a little bit of shift on that. I talk about it as putting the needs of the relationship first. Because number one, I think that's a little bit more accessible to people, and
right.
it kind of removes that you versus me attitude.
Sure.
Because in my world, if the relationship isn't working for you, it's not working. If the relationship isn't working for your partner, it's not working. So you know, any one of those three components can go, okay, wait, stop, we have to take a look at what's happening, and in getting it to be about something bigger than either one of you, which I think people do with parenting a lot, and I'm always confused as to why, if they get it for one aspect, it's so hard for the other aspect. Do you have any idea about why you think that might be such a challenge for people?
You know, I don't know. I still think that we naturally kind of inside of us, we're born with kind of this sense to protect ourselves and to respond to threats. And so mm-hmm. I think naturally, you know, we focus on ourselves at the and when we're in a relationship, particularly if someone's hasn't been in a relationship for a long time, we kind of get set in certain ways. And mm-hmm. you know, we tend to have these biases. We tend to see the other person as having the flaws, and we don't have the faults. We kind of see through this tainted window, you know, to this tainted glass. When we look outward, and it's really tough to kind of look inward and say that, yeah, I might not be right. You know, I need to work on this and do my part, and the relationship should be priority.
Yeah, and that seems to be a particular challenge for a lot of people in that, you know, when I tell people what I do for a living, they just kind of look at me like I'm crazy. And it's like, yes, and I actually choose to do this, because one of the things that I tell my clients is when you are in a relationship, you have a built-in scapegoat. It's really easy to look at that other person, and when I work with people, I said, you can give me a laundry list of all the things that your partner does that either drive you crazy or are wrong, or however you want to phrase it. I said, now I want you to tell me about all the things you're doing in the relationship that's creating problems. And they just look at me like, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm going, yes, we all are. We all do.
Yeah, but we're often blind, yeah, to our own faults, yeah, to our little struggles and the baggage that we bring to the relationship. Yeah, you're right.
So I just, this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and you're listening to a discussion with David Schramm, who's a family life specialist and an associate professor at the University of Missouri. And we're talking about how marriages end up in a rut and what you can do to get your relationship back on track. So, David, we've been talking about what gets us into trouble. But what is it that you suggest in your SPARK acronym to get people back on track to where they actually not are just kind of muddling through their marriages, but really enjoying them?
You know, that's a great question. I like to come back to, in SPARK, I actually take those same letters and parches, and I rearrange them a little bit. I think the S stands for service in SPARK, and that is actually turning out. Again, it's kind of the opposite of pride and the me first. If I can turn away from me and turn toward my spouse or my significant other, and look for little ways to serve them, to do things for them, kind of put them, you know, think of them first, doing small and simple things. I like the quote, first observe, then serve, looking for ways mm-hmm. maybe to sacrifice or to help them out, to open the door, to think ahead, to make a meal or lunch or clean up dishes or after the kids. It's those small and simple things that will get us back on track. That's actually closely tied to the P in SPARK, and that is positivity. One of the things that mm-hmm. I encourage individuals and couples when they come with struggles is the more that we talk about our struggles, the more that cements it in our brains. So we have to kind of shift our way of focus. I call the 80-20. John Gottman, again, showed that we like about 80% of the person that we're with, and there's about roughly 20% that bugs us, that bothers us, that we wish would change. But what happens mm-hmm. in relationships sometimes is that we get stuck on that 20% that kind of bugs us.
Right.
And then we dwell on it. We focus on it. We complain about it.
And we actually look for it.
We do. And when we see it, and then we almost anticipate it. And
right.
then almost in this kind of a sick way, as we're looking for it on purpose, so then we can focus on it again and point it out and say, see, this is what you're doing that drives me nuts, instead of talking about and focusing on the 80% that we really love, that we really enjoy, reinforcing the positive, the 80%, remembering why did we get together in the first place, and recalling some of those memories, looking at pictures. Again, that kind of sparks the memories, right? And that brain connection reminds us of all the good times that we've had instead of all the shortcomings and the failing, which we all have.
Right, which we all do. But I'm going to go back to something that you said, because it made me think about a comment that my mother, bless her heart, love that Southern expression, said to me once, because you talked about observing then serving. And she and I were, I was with my family, and we were all hiking, and luckily I was behind her, when she said, I don't think women should have to ask for what they want.
Mm.
And my jaw hit the floor. So yeah. It's kind of like, you know, and so this whole kind of observing thing, I think, can get us into trouble, because we either don't see what the other person wants us to see, or we just miss it entirely because it doesn't register. So can you give somebody some idea about what they should be looking for, what observing actually means?
That's a great question. I'll give you an example. So it's my wife's birthday, was actually last week, and we went shopping a couple of weeks before, and, you know, different stores. It's not my favorite thing to do, but I go because she loves to shop, and so I go with her, and she's looking at different things, different clothes, and I'm kind of just observing. I'm just kind of watching what things that she likes, and she holds up shirts and says, oh, you know, I would really like a coat like this sometime, a jacket, and she put it back, mm-hmm. and then it just made a little mental note, just kind of being observing, being aware of if it's her, not me, and how bored I am and how tired and how I don't like shopping. But she's really into this. And so then later, you know, when she's not around, a different day, I actually drove to the mall and purchased this jacket that she said that she always wanted. And it meant a lot, because I was paying attention to the little cues. But to be honest, we've been married 17 years now this weekend, and it took me several years to kind of catch on and to get some of these cues. But so there's little cues that we have to pay attention to, but I think, Leslie, you're talking about also being aware of vocalizing what we want, how we like to feel connected, what we love, and what I need from this other person, and not assuming that gets us into trouble of you should know.
You should know
that I like this or I don't like that. Yeah, we need to communicate and let that person know.
Well, and what you're describing, especially around your wife, is actually a sense of curiosity, a sense of, let me know more about you. I mean, and I joke, because like I said, my husband and I have been together for over 30 years, and every so often he'll do something, and I'll look at him like, where did that come from? So, I mean, even after all that length of time, there's stuff we don't know about each other, partially because we don't stay static as human beings. We continue to grow over the years. So my thoughts and feelings, while probably very similar to what they were when we first met, aren't identical, and neither are his.
Yes.
So to make that assumption, I think, can, again, we're talking about assuming, which always is a bad thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Assuming that I know my partner, and that nothing has changed about them, is probably not a really good recipe for success.
Yep, you're right. I'm not a therapist, but I do have couples, because they know the area that I teach in relationships and parenting. And it comes up all the time, you know, oh man, that he's just not the same as she's not the same when we were first married and newlyweds, we did this and this, and he's changed and she's changed. And we change, we evolve, our interests, our preferences, things that we like. So we have to stay in tune. It's like updating an app, right? I use that analogy on a phone. Most of us have now these phones, and there's updates, and we have to kind of check and update our new system to the latest, and we have to check in. We have to update ourselves of what our preferences, what we like, what we need in the relationship.
Well, and in some of your literature, and I can't remember which blog post it was in, but you talked about that if we're actually not moving forward we're actually moving backward.
It is. Yeah, I kind of use that escalator analogy. It takes work. Relationships, they just do. They just take a lot of work, and that's the effort of trying to, you know, walk up this escalator, the, you know, it's coming down. Mm-hmm. You're walking it up, and it's coming down, because if we don't do anything, we'll naturally, you know, it'll just kind of take us back slowly. And so we do. We have to invest in the relationship, invest our time and interests, and look for possibilities and opportunities for connection. Because when we again focus on problems, you'll have more problems. But it does. It takes conscious connection, coming back to that, and instead of being, you know, the complaint monster, I refer to, I've just complain, and that's just taking little dips out of the little cups out of the pool, out of that pool of connection. But
right.
we have to invest.
But we have to, and this is where I think most people get off track. And we've talked about this before. I don't think it's intentional. I think there's a sense of complacency, mm-hmm. that things are okay. You know, we've gotten to this point wherever we are in our lives, and I call it the difference between feeling secure in the relationship and taking your partner for granted,
mm-hmm.
in that we stop making that effort. Years ago, I had a friend who was about to get married, or was thinking about getting married for the third time. And he asked my opinion about whether I thought he should. And I said, well, because he believed that there was a difference between courtship and marriage behavior, with basically all the energy went into courtship behavior and no energy went into marriage behavior. And I said to him, unless you have flipped those two things, that marriage behavior actually is more important than courtship behavior, please don't get married again.
That's right.
Because, you know, it's this idea that, oh, we're done. I don't have to make any more effort. You know, my partner's going to be here, and I can concentrate on my job or the kids or tennis or whatever it is I want to concentrate on, and I don't have to do anything with this person. And to me, I think that's absolutely deadly. And so you're talking about staying connected, because, you know, then we're growing with our partner, not away from them.
Yes. Yep, that's exactly right. You know, it happens. It's so common. You know, it happens to the best of us when we just simply let something go and we kind of naturally drift apart, or we get busy. We're busy now with our mm-hmm. lives. And so I don't, for mm-hmm. the most part, I don't think that this is intentional. But then
right.
we start seeing other things that interest us. We may get bored. We're not paying attention to the relationship. And so we do. We naturally then slowly, I think for a lot of us, the evaporation just kind of sets in as we neglect the relationship. So we do. We have to tune in. Some of the things that I recommend are called rituals of connection. You know, what do you mm-hmm. do? Are there things that you do when you leave? When you first see each other, are there things that you do at nighttime instead of getting into ruts? I think rituals
right.
have more meaning, something that we can discuss, something that we can do. When you go out, I have little rules that we can't talk about money, we can't talk about work, and can't talk about kids, you know, and so we talk about our hopes and our dreams and
right.
things that we would love. You know, if we had a lot of money, what would you love? And we kind of just like to
fantasize,
dream.
Fantasize, yeah.
Dream together about, trips or places we'd love to visit instead of. And I've seen couples just not say anything. They go out to dinner, and some couples are either on their phones the whole time, or they just kind of sit there, and not talk to each other.
I'm frequently wanting to just walk around to all the tables in the restaurant and just drop my card on the table.
Wouldn't that be great? It's needed. They slowly just kind of drifting without even kind of realizing it, and then before it's too late,
Yeah, I mean, and I can't remember the movie. It's Steve Carell and Julianne Moore, and the movie's just escaping me off the top of my head, where they're out to dinner for their weekly or monthly date night, and and he's ordering dessert and she's ordering a divorce. And it's like, because they've gotten so out of touch, even though they go out, you know, they follow the prescription of dating.
Yeah.
They're not. I mean, I always tell the people who work with me, that when your date is to go have fun and enjoy each other's company. So it's like no talking about the relationship, no talking about the kids, no talking about, you know, mothers-in-law, you know, work. I mean, it's more about reconnecting as individuals.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so it's very much in alignment with what you're talking about.
It is. It's having an emotional experience. And the more brain search, the more things that we learn about the brain and positivity, that it really is a choice. It's a choice to choose to engage in something purposeful, going out, having a good time, going the other day, we just went at miniature golfing. It's been years since we've done something like that and had a great
yeah.
time. And it really is about attitude, choosing to have a positive attitude, enjoying the time, connecting with that other person. Yep, and mm-hmm. all that adds another cup of connection into the relationship pool. Just makes it that much deeper.
Right. So, David, where can people find your words of wisdom?
Yeah, I created a blog not too long ago called cupofconnection.blogspot.com. They can go there and they learn about the parches and the spark, their relation dehydration, other things that I talk about, both in relationships and parenting.
Right. So, you know, basically what we've been talking about and the point that I really want people to take away is that nothing thrives on neglect, and that is true of your marriage as well. And you can recapture that wonderful feeling, that love and connection that when you first got together, and it's not a magic pill. There's nothing that you're going to take. It just takes being intentional, making the time and making the commitment to be together. And if you need some help with that, then reach out today. Reach out to me. Go read David's stuff. Go listen to the other podcasts on my show, because the goal is to find out how to make your marriage better. And so you can do that by keeping listening to me, by reading David's blog. There's a lot of information out there. Don't wait. And until next week, stay loving.